Download the KTTH smartphone app so when we have the breaking news on Amy Coney Barrett, we'll send you an alert just in case you step away from your radio. Let's find out what's trending.
What's trending at home?
So weekend protests hit Bellevue and Woodinville. They remained relatively peaceful in the context of comparing it to what happens in Seattle with all of the riots. Although in Bellevue, that was close to replicating what happens in Seattle. Had it not been for some really good police work and a mayor who was on top of things. So the mayor declared a civil emergency ahead of the protest on Saturday night. The activist group behind it is called Every Night Direct Demonstration, END, E-N-D-D. Now, these are the activists that threaten homeowners on the basis of their skin color, telling them to leave their neighborhood, leave their home, and pay reparations. These are the folks who show up to the homes of lawmakers and public servants. These are the ones who, in many, many, many cases, engage in threats and vandalism and violence. We've seen it in Seattle over and over and over again. And so when they got wind that they were planning their direct demonstration in the city of Bellevue, the police chief, Steve Milette, who's going to be on the show at 4:15, he had his officers going around to the businesses and warning them, hey, before these protesters arrive, before these criminal activists arrive, you should get your businesses ready. And for a lot of the stores, they decided to board up their windows, their doors, and close for the day.
Their intentions was to break windows, to engage in property destruction, set dumpsters on fire, assault police officers, and basically wreak havoc in our city. And we weren't having any of that.
It's not hard to figure that out as he speaks with Cairo 7 TV. Why is it not hard? Because number one, they do it whenever they get out into these kinds of riots in Seattle. And number two, they talk openly about some of their planning online. That was some of the intelligence. Now, I can tell you exclusively on this show that we found out there were weapons, including propane tanks and barrels of rocks, that were stashed all across downtown Bellevue that the police were able to find ahead of time and confiscate. So think about that. They left propane tanks, we're alleging in this case of the demonstration, the demonstrators, they left weapons, stashed weapons around the area in which they were going to quote-unquote peacefully protest. What do you think the intent was for the stack of rocks and the propane tanks? Everyone knows what these people are capable of, and we know what their MO is. Now, there was some vandalism in Bellevue, but it was not much. There was a brief threat of physical altercations between two sides. Didn't go anywhere. And as a result of the really good work, 4 hours later, it ended up being legitimately deemed a peaceful protest. Because, you see, when police stations are able to do their jobs, when police departments can do their jobs, it keeps the peace. Now, in Woodinville, slightly different. It got tense after a group of anti-Trump activists showed up to taunt the pro-Trump activists. Mandy was there. She was on the anti-Trump side. And she told Cairo 7 TV that she wanted to bring some levity, I guess, to the situation.
So I thought I will come down dressed as the plague doctor, which is what I do to make people laugh because, you know, COVID.
That's so funny. 220,000 people are dead. Yeah, okay. It is kind of weird that that's how you're positioning your protest to highlight the dangers of COVID. The way you do so is by wearing a costume that you think will make people laugh. I mean, okay.
Plague doctors are hilarious, Jason.
You do you.
You never went to a plague doctor and got three good jokes before you left with your prescription?
Okay, that's fair. That is fair. It is, in a way, irresistible. Now, police said things got a little crazy when an anti-Trump protester threw a bucket of liquid at a Trump supporter, and the people who were there suspect that it contained water. But not just water, huh? Also, they believed it had urine and spit in it. It was caught on cell phone video.
Hey, gun.
You see, the guy who got thrown the bucket of whatever at, he pulled his handgun out.
What's your name? What's your name? What's your name? What's your name? I'm calling the police. I'm calling the police.
Just real quick, is her tone almost like in a mocking and non-serious way, I'm calling the police?
I don't, it's the worst tone.
Right? It's just, it's very, and by the way, just a note, just call the police.
What's your name? What's your name? I need your name. I'm going to call the police. How is that helpful?
Well, and let's say you're talking to someone who has reason to believe that they will get arrested because you're calling police. They're not going to give you their name.
No.
So just go ahead and call police. You don't have to make the announcement 14 times yelling at a whole bunch of people.
What's your last name? What's your name? What's your name?
What's your social security number? What is your credit card number too? And also give me the security pin on the other side. And by the way, can you also just tell me like some other personal, what is it? And by the way, if you give me this information, we're going to use it against you to have you arrested. So I'll ask again, what is your full name? And throw in your email address too.
What's your name?
My name is Daniel Burris.
Oh, he gave it.
That wasn't the guy with the gun.
Okay.
Okay. What's your name and what's your name and what's your name? Because I got it on video.
Okay, then what do you need the names for, dum-dum? What are we doing here? You're starting a club? Are you going to reach out afterwards to make sure they had a good experience at your protest?
Hey, you pulled a gun on girls. I have it on.
Hey, we don't see gender. We treat people equally regardless of their gender. We pull guns on everybody. I'm kidding. But, I mean, it is kind of weird that it's the feminists who are saying, you pulled a gun on a woman.
She was so out of breath at the end. What's your name?
And then the other people, then what we didn't pull at the end of this, she goes to someone else. You didn't pull a gun on us because we're women. We demand you pull a gun on us because we are women and we want to be treated just like everybody else.
Equality is amazing.
Right?
Video. It's f***ing water, you snowflake. It's water. It's water, you snowflake.
Oh, my God. Yeah, we got it. You're taking ownership of the term snowflake because conservatives use it. We got it. It's very cool. Thank you so much. You're very impressive. I, for one, am impressed by the means in which you go about protesting. Is it? Oh, it's just water. Let's say it was just water. Okay. Did you need to throw it at the person, or is that one step too far? I'm asking because I am kind of curious. This whole idea, well, it's just water. So if they threw water at you, bucket and all, thumbs up, you're all good, it's all cool? We'd be okay with that? You throw buckets of water at women, at girls? Is that what you do? And by the way, not only girls were there. There was a 15-year-old by the name of Carter, who, by the way, was on their side, the anti-Trump people. But he confirmed to Cairo 7 TV that his side started it.
That's when the man with the gun drew his weapon.
He drew it once the water was thrown
on
him. Yes.
And the man who threw the bucket immediately fled and went towards the 76.
He just ran away. Here's our friend Mandy again.
Someone came out of the bush. I swear, I didn't even see him coming. He came
Maybe
out of the bush
a
with a bucket. It was the most ridiculous thing I've ever seen. And he threw the bucket on the guy and ran.
Okay, so then I guess the question becomes, is it okay to pull a gun out in this case?
Depends on how much water.
Well, it depends on what was actually in the bucket. I don't think you should be pulling guns on people when you don't have a gun being pulled or a knife being pulled on you. And clearly you're not... Your life is not on the line if it was legitimately just water. But what if it was something more?
Wouldn't the proper response be a water gun? That way,
we don't know what was a real gun. Shots weren't fired. Everyone is okay at the end of the day. And by the way, police are looking into this. They don't know who did either event. But it's possible that both of them get arrested or cited or whatever. Or how about this? Stop throwing water at people, and then people stop pulling guns on each other.
Bam. That's fair.
I think that is a totally reasonable position, and you heard it here first.
You're the first one to ever think
of
that? Wow. Wow, you should start a campaign.
Put that in the list of firsts that we've done on this show. 1-800-465-8770 if you want to join the conversation, send me a text message. When we come back, we're going to dive into the only race for judge in Snohomish County that is contested. Robert Grant is one of the candidates. He's going to stop by in a moment. Don't forget, text me, 1-800-465-8770. Let's find out what else is trending.
What's trending on the campaign trail?
Of the judicial position Snohomish County voters are getting to weigh in on, ballots in hand, one is contested, only one. the one to replace Judge Eric Lucas, who is retiring. It is a race between Robert Grant and Cassandra Lopez Shaw. We're going to be talking with both candidates today. We start with Robert Grant, who is a career prosecutor who spent over a decade as a deputy prosecutor in Snohomish County, and he joins me now. Robert, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you for having me, and I thank you for giving me the opportunity to speak to your viewers. And as you know, judicial races are not very talked about, which is weird because it is one of the equal branches of the legal system, and it is super important that you have the right judge for this position.
100%. And so let's talk about this. What did you learn as a prosecutor that would help you become a fair judge?
So it's just not as a prosecutor. My career first started as a law clerk to one of the now retired Superior Court judges, and I've also been a judge pro tem in Edmonds and in Everett. But as a prosecutor, you have to learn to do the right thing no matter how hard it is. I have cases where I sit with victims of child sexual abuse knowing that they are in fact victims, but I simply can't prove it. And as a prosecutor, you have a duty to the defendant as well to not bring a charge unless you know you can prove it or believe you can prove it beyond a reasonable doubt. And so when you sit there and you have those hard conversations with the parents of a child victim or the child victim themselves knowing that an abuse happened, and say, I believe you, but I can't prove it, so I can't go forward. That is something we do every day as a prosecutor. You make tough, hard decisions, which is exactly what a judge has to do. Every day, you make tough, hard decisions that can and will have an impact on that person's life forever.
And I imagine, you know, that's part of your attempt to address the potential bias that some might have, that you would be too pro-prosecutor and anti-defense if you were a judge.
Yes, this is a nonpartisan position, and I believe that you should absolutely be fair to both sides. One of my mottos in life and on my, you look at my campaign t-shirts, it says justice must serve everyone or it serves no one, which is why in this nonpartisan race, I've looked for bipartisan support, and I've spoken to whoever wants to hear from me, and I hear from them, and I've learned a lot from talking to the various groups, and I'm proud to say that I've earned endorsements from a lot of bipartisan support throughout this county.
What do folks talk about with you most as it relates to their concerns about the judicial system out there?
So the thing that I think is universal is that everybody wants the most qualified, competent judge to hear their case. And one of the things that everyone fears is that they just won't be heard. Mm-hmm. Everyone wants the opportunity to be heard and be treated fairly. And so they are looking for a judge that doesn't come in with these preconceived notions or ideas about you or where you come from or your background, but will actually give you the opportunity to be heard, have empathy, and rule according to the law. Now, you might not rule in their favor, and that's okay. They just want to have the opportunity to be heard and leave the courtroom knowing that they gave it their best shot and they didn't get ruled against them or for them because of whatever they're affiliated with or who they might be associated with, but because they are a human being and that their position in this case happened to be wrong.
Just joining me, I'm talking with Robert Grant. He is running for judge in Snohomish County against Cassandra Lopez Shaw, who will be on the show a little bit later. Some folks have come out in favor of Lopez Shaw. One of them is public defender Natalie Tarantino, who has claimed that you don't have the right temperament, that you are arrogant and petty and not prepared for court. I imagine you disagree with all of that, or I hope you do.
Well, it's unfortunate, and this is an adversarial system when you have prosecutors versus public defenders. Although she's the one public defender that had that quote. I have a tremendous amount of relationships with many public defenders and respect them immensely. In fact, some of the former public defenders who are now judges that have worked with both my opponent and myself, like Judge Mary Beth Dingledye, Judge Linda Coburn, Judge Jennifer Rancourt, have all endorsed me.
And Robert Grant, who we're talking to right now, has also been endorsed by the judge who is retiring, in which Robert wants to seek that seat. Should that matter?
I think not only should that matter because of I don't think everybody should just necessarily say, oh, well, the guy who's retiring has endorsed one candidate, you should vote for him. What matters is not only does Judge Lucas know both of us, but it also, most of the judges throughout this county, you can go to our websites and you can see that the judges who work with both of us for years and years, who they support, who has earned their endorsement. And I have been overwhelmingly supported by the judges here in Snohomish County, which I think for the voters should be an indication of who's the most qualified. It is extremely difficult to determine in a judicial position who is the most qualified person, just simply because it's not talked about. Mm-hmm. And in COVID, we haven't had the opportunity to go and doorbell and do parades like you typically would.
So I know that this is a nonpartisan position on the Superior Court, but at the same time, Progressive Voters Guide has come out and endorsed your opponent. Should we read into that, that you are not as, quote unquote, progressive, ideologically speaking, a more sort of moderate, center moderate, or even to the right?
I think you can look at my endorsements and look who have supported me. I have support from Democrats, Republicans. I have support from independent groups. I think that this is still a purple county, and mm-hmm. you are still a human being, no matter what your political affiliation is, and you should be treated fairly and impartially. And I think you can look into that, and I will, and I can promise that I will treat everyone equally and fairly and impartially.
So last question for you. One of the issues that King County has faced with is very similar to what you guys, just on a slightly different level, in treating prolific offenders. The ones who commit crimes, they generally don't get harsh punishments because they're dealing maybe with an underlying addiction or a mental health issue, and they end up not going into the system the way that they ought to, and they end up back on the streets committing the same kinds of crimes over and over and over again. So what is your general philosophy in dealing with prolific offenders, given that they probably will have come before you multiple times in the past?
So it really depends on the person. Each case is unique and individual. I can tell you that I come from a chemical dependency background before I went to law school. My wife and I worked at an inpatient treatment facility. I have seen successful cases where people graduate drug court and it reduces the recidivism. They aren't in that carousel where they keep going around and around and keep going into our system and getting out and not getting the treatment. There is a tremendous benefit to people who have the addiction if they want help. Our court system is underfunded for the mental health aspect. You would be surprised of the uptick of cases that we see where a person is suffering from some mental health issues or have the mental health and drug issues themselves. That being said, there are cases where people aren't committing crimes because of the drug addiction or substance abuse. They are committing crimes because they are violent, for mm-hmm. example. We have an uptick of domestic violence cases here in Snohomish County. And those cases and those people should be looked at individually. What a judge can do is very limited. The legislation has set guidelines of what a person can be sentenced to in a certain range. And I think you and some of your listeners would be quite surprised of what the different sentencing ranges are that a judge must impose on a person.
Having looked into some of it, I'm not surprised, maybe sometimes shocked in what they actually are, but I'm not surprised at some of them. If you're just tuning into the tail end, we've been talking with Robert Grant. He is hoping to be the next judge in Snohomish County. He's the only one part of a Superior Court race that's actually contested. If you want to learn more about this candidate, go to robertkgrantforjudge.com. It's all spelled out, robertkgrantforjudge.com. Robert, thank you so much for stopping by. I really appreciate it.
And I really appreciate it. And thank you for giving me the opportunity. And I wish you the best.
Absolutely. You as well. We'll be talking to Robert's opponent, Cassandra Lopez-Shaw, later this afternoon at 5:15, so we can hear from both sides. But again, robertkgrantforjudge.com. You've been listening to The Jason Rantz Show. Welcome Welcome back to the Jason Rand Show on AM 770 KTTH and 94.5 FM on the Greater East Side. The future of policing is quite literally on the line in King County with three separate but related charter amendments. I, for the record, voted no on charter amendments 4, 5, and 6. Joining me on the line with their take is someone who's actually directly impacted by all of them, although somewhat dependent on which one we're talking about, King County Sheriff Mitzi Johanknik. Sheriff Johanknik, welcome back to the show.
Thanks for having me on this evening, Jason. Appreciate it.
So all of them obviously impact you. One especially impacts you directly. So let's start with Charter Amendment number 5, which takes away our rights in King County, the right of a voter to elect the sheriff. Now, obviously, you and I have spoken on air before. We know you're against this charter amendment. So take us through why someone would want to directly vote on the sheriff's office versus giving that power to the King County Council.
Sure. Let's start off with right away that anybody in the community can get a hold of me directly. In this amendment, if you have an appointed sheriff, that doesn't necessarily happen. And in fact, for decision making, you have to go through layers of executive oversight for that amendment. And aside from having their own independently elected sheriff and that ability for me to jump in and get resources headed in a particular direction one way or another, it brings partisanship mm-hmm. into how the office is run. And I serve as a nonpartisan. Politics don't come into play for me.
It doesn't. And whenever you get any politician involved, the decision making is going to be impacted. And I can imagine a scenario in which, let's say you were appointed by this council, although I think they probably would, no offense, they would probably not choose you because you actually, you know, support law enforcement and choose not to be partisan. But I imagine in a scenario in which the politics make more sense to completely ignore the policing needs of, say, you know, Issaquah and Snoqualmie and North Bend or Federal Way, you know, they don't have to worry. That appointed sheriff won't actually have to be subject to the concerns of these individual neighborhoods versus if it's political, they're just going to give the political coverage and essentially do what the council says and not have to worry about whether or not they are, you know, taking off the voters in SeaTac.
Well, and that goes out of the executive side as well.
Yeah.
So the executive would appoint and as you're saying, the council would affirm on Charter Amendment 5. But that's exactly right. The members of the community, wherever they are, hold me accountable. I think it's interesting, and you might be getting to this later, is the argument about why council and executive should appoint and the heavy, vote that comes from the city of Seattle, and that's mm-hmm. just not democratic when you elect your sheriff. Well, that cuts two way when you're voting for charter amendments, too.
Yeah, 100%. It is rather ridiculous. And this is a King County Council that has a very, very strong tilt to the left. And when we say left, I mean Seattle progressive left. And that is not going to bode well if you care about public safety and you live in Sammamish or Snoqualmie or Tukwila and Kent. It doesn't matter whether these individual cities have their own police departments. Some do and others don't. But the work that you do to supplement a lot of these communities is on the line right now.
That's correct. And we all work together. I mean, just this morning I was on a Zoom meeting with colleagues on the east side in preparation for elections. And, you know, that is the heart and soul, our connection with other agencies, whether contracts with the sheriff or not. It goes across the whole of King County and really the state. And so it's essential that we don't have politics playing a role in determining what course the sheriff's yeah. office takes.
Sheriff Mitzi Johanknik joining me on the line, Sheriff of King County. Charter Amendment number 4 would allow the Law Enforcement Oversight Group, OLEO, have subpoena authority. OLEO is, at least in the past, has been run by someone who is pretty, pretty, pretty hostile to law enforcement, and it essentially becomes what I view personally as an activist wing of King County to oversee some of the complaints against law enforcement officials within the sheriff's department. I voted again no on number four. What say you?
Well, I voted no on it as well. I just, you know, it's one more thing that's added to the charter that has to go through extended processes to become effective. And right now, the Office of Law Enforcement Oversight has an interim director who's very, we're working with her very closely, but this is, they don't have an investigative authority except into my 20 appointed positions and myself. And so I don't believe they need a subpoena to get information from me that would come with public disclosure anyway. And I'm open to providing any support that they need along the way, as well as, you know, we're very transparent. Our labor unions are very transparent. We've got nothing to hide. And when things go wrong, we work through it. Yeah. But we don't. Yeah.
It just feels like a little bit of a potential for abuse of power. So I'm with you in voting no on four. And then let's go to the last one, Charter Amendment number 6. Sorry, we're going a little bit out of order, but number 5 was the one that impacts the sheriff most directly. But number 6 is also pretty significant in that it changes the duties of the department. It could change the structure of the department, where instead of you being in charge or whomever is the elected sheriff, you're giving a whole bunch of that power over to the King County Council, who, again, maybe they're not able to appoint the sheriff, but they can change your priorities. That just seems out of whack.
This is one of the scariest pieces of legislation I have seen in a long time, and I'm not trying to you know, exclaim danger. What I'm trying to
I'll
say
do that.
Is,
it is dangerous. This is a bad idea.
This is directly an attempt to defund the sheriff's office. I was told that by one of the authors of the amendment. This amendment did not go through the normal charter review process. And while I think it's a bait and switch, Jason, quite frankly, and it would allow the council and the executive to totally control and dismantle the sheriff's office. That's what the legislation is intended to do.
Do you think that it's clear to the voters at this point? There has not been a lot of attention focused on any of these three charter amendments. I know that some law enforcement groups have put some money into ads, but it kind of feels like the King County Council wanted to put this out there in a sort of sneaky way, hoping that people will be confused.
That's my impression. My impression is that they probably believed that the going to an appointed sheriff would fail. And so then what's next best? And in 3 weeks' time, over a very short window in before the deadline to get it on the ballot, this was formulated and approved of to go on the ballot by the council, who, I will remind you, members told me that they would never put Charter Amendment 5 on the ballot because they thought that people had the right to elect their sheriff.
Yeah, just looking at the makeup of this council, with two exceptions or maybe three exceptions, they're pretty far to the left, and a couple exceptions very, very far to the left. And by the way, you know, to point out that they did this on short notice, they actually didn't even hit the deadline to get it submitted, and yet somehow, even though they were late to put this on the ballot, it somehow makes it.
Yeah, confusing to me. At least the parts that go into the voter's guide.
Yeah, but I guess you don't have to follow the rules when you're in positions of power and privilege. Again, vote no on King County Charter Amendments number 4, 5, and 6. The future of policing is quite literally on the line in King County. It's not just important for you to vote no on these three charter amendments, but it's very important to tell your friends and family and neighbors what's on the line as well. You're going to have to step up, folks, and do some of the work, because this is very dangerous. King County Sheriff Mitzi Jo Hanknecht, thank you so much for stopping by. I really appreciate it.
Thank you for the opportunity.
Absolutely. You're listening to the Jason Rand Show. Welcome back to the Jason Rand Show. Thank you so much for tuning in. I really, really do appreciate it. Amy Coney Barrett is going to be confirmed to the Supreme Court within the next 30 to 45 minutes. When it happens, we will be carrying it live and commercial free. The question becomes whether or not Democrats are going to try some last ditch effort that will be futile, but a last ditch effort to at least slow the process down. After that fails, there is going to be a vote. Now, we understand that there's going to be one Republican who votes no, and it's Susan Collins, who is doing so not because she doesn't support Amy Coney Barrett, but because Susan Collins is in trouble in Maine, which is a fiercely independent state, and they don't like Donald Trump. And there's a strong Democratic opponent this time around. And since, so Susan Collins is hoping to vote no to show her independence from the Trump administration and pick up some extra votes and hopefully stay in the Senate. Now, Lisa Murkowski, the senator from Alaska, originally said she did not support moving forward with the nomination. She was against the process. And she voted no to extend the process, to move it forward. However, now that she's in a position where she's going to have to vote on the actual nominee, she announced, yeah, I'm with ACB.
I believe that the only way to put us back on the path of appropriate consideration of judicial nominees is to evaluate Judge Barrett as we would want to be judged on the merits of her qualifications. And we do that when that final question comes before us. And when it does, I will be a yes.
She will be a yes in just about 30, 45 minutes, as will Mitt Romney.
Mr. President, I rise today to express my support for the confirmation of Judge Amy Coney Barrett as an Associate Justice of the Supreme Court. She's exceptionally intelligent, academically astute, and impeccably credentialed. She has a record of sound opinions and temperament as a judge on the Seventh Circuit Court of Appeals.
Mm-hmm.
Her life experiences provide her with valuable perspective and evident wisdom. Perhaps most important, she is a woman of unquestionable character and integrity, the presence of which is essential to our nation, as the confidence of the court itself is in the balance. I will be honored to vote to confirm her nomination.
So this is obviously a historic moment for this country. We don't see that many vacancies. This president saw three during his term. And he filled the vacancies with really, really smart, dedicated conservatives. And this is going to change the future of this country, in my view, for the better, and presumably your view for the better. Regardless as to whether or not the president wins re-election, he will have shaped this country and the way we view some of these issues for potentially decades. Now, of course, that all depends on how long the current makeup with Amy Coney Barrett actually stands. Clarence Thomas is getting up there. Clarence Thomas is, I believe he's in his mid to late 70s. Peyton's going to look up Clarence Thomas's age for in a second. But he's getting up there. And at some point, he, of course, is also going to step down. And that's why this next election is especially important. 72 he is. That's why this next election is especially important. Now, we don't have any reason to believe imminently that Clarence Thomas is going to step aside. But if he's going to make that decision, we would prefer that he make it with Trump in office. And if he doesn't make it in the next 4 years, we hope that he does it with another Republican in office so that we can maintain this conservative majority. It's also important because we got to have a Senate that's going to confirm the next nominee. Again, hopefully one that is made by a Republican president. Now, Trump is out there every single day doing three events a day. He did three in Pennsylvania today. He's going to be going all around these battleground states. Biden spent the last couple days doing some damage control on his stances on fracking. Stances, I say, not stance, because he has taken multiple stances in conflict with one another. He supports a ban on fracking. He supported before, he claimed he didn't. But even now, when you actually pay close attention to his position, he doesn't say, I don't want to ban fracking, period. Right? Now he's changed it. I don't want to ban fracking. I want to go away from it. Well, if you want to permanently go away from fracking, it means you want to ban it. That's the end result. It's the same end result. And in Pennsylvania, it's really, really hurting the Biden campaign. And when we talk about these independent voters or last-minute voters or undecided voters, that really does come into play.
To hear him voice his opinions on the energy industry and how he wants to be zero emissions, all I can think about is that is going to cost the taxpayers, and that is going to hit home harder for the middle class. He wasn't being as honest as he says he's being.
That is a Pennsylvania voter talking to MSNBC. I've got lots of audio from lots of voters saying they're not going to vote for Joe Biden over fracking, talking to MSNBC and CNN. They would not air this video if they had alternatives. If they had people coming forward and saying, you know what, it doesn't matter, I support Joe. They would be airing the heck out of those clips. But they're not, and they're not for a reason. Pennsylvania is incredibly important to the president. Biden, according to the polls, holds a slight edge over Trump, which means Trump is actually ahead. My position on polls, very, very simple. If the president is down by about 5 points, he is going to win that state. He's now down in Pennsylvania, I want to say like 2 points, maybe on average, maybe three. Pollsters don't know how to reach Trump supporters. They didn't in 2016. They learned literally no lessons. And they don't know how to do that now. So things I think are looking good for the president in Pennsylvania. If he wins in Florida and Pennsylvania, the election is almost certainly over. If he wins Pennsylvania but loses Florida, he has still a shot to keep the White House. So all eyes on Pennsylvania and, of course, Florida. All eyes right now on ACB in the next hour getting confirmed to the Supreme Court.